Continue our conversation today about patience, anger, stability, those things that we've been focusing on. I was struck last week when Shinshu was talking about Shantideva's teachings on patience, how important it is to cultivate the correct spirit in our practice lives. And it reminded me of a teacher story about the great Rinzai master Hakuin. And Hakuin lived from 1685 to 1768. And he was and is renowned in Zen history for both his ferocity of dedication to practice, to Zen practice, and his wisdom and capacity to make the teachings real for people in every walk of life. He talked about Zen in action a lot and was very disparaging of people who just sat around on their butts all the time, particularly people in our school of Buddhism. But anyway. But he never underestimated the capacity of the people he taught. He never thought they needed to leave the life they had and go off someplace else, we say, like the dusty realms of other lands, to realize enlightenment, to really realize the teachings. And he was particularly supportive of women, all women, including women who are often considered less than sex workers, people who were in outcasts. So he's a pretty terrific example to us in many ways. So here's the story. Hakuin had, he was an established Zen monk by this point. So he was living in a village, and he was very respected in that village. And then a young woman whose parents lived nearby in the village became pregnant. And her parents were very unhappy, let's say angry. And she wouldn't say who the father was. But after some pressure, she named Hakuin as the father. So the parents went to Hakuin and were understandably very upset with him, very angry at him. What kind of monk is this that could father a child with a young woman? And he listened to them. And his very famous response to their disparagement was, "Is that so?" So then the child was born, and they brought the child to Hakuin, said, "It's your baby, take care of it." And he did. He found someone to nurse the child. He took the child on his begging rounds with him. He took very good care of the child. And after a while, the young woman felt, so they say, remorse or longing for the father of her child, or we don't know. And she told her parents the truth, that the father was a young man who lived nearby. And the parents went to Hakuin and apologized and said, you know, wow, look at what you did. You're great. You're such a wonderful monk. And his response was, and Hakuin willingly gave the child back. You could imagine he cared for this child very much. Gave the child back to the child's parents. So we can look at this story and think about what our response might be. There's no trace of anger or blame or defensiveness in Hakuin's response. In a way, we can think of Hakuin's response as a complete realization of Shantideva's patience, right? Complete expression of mature, deeply realized Zen practice. Hakuin's self was not the self of opposition. Having realized the depth of interdependence, the depth of our intimacy, our responsiveness, our connectedness, he did not understand himself as other than the whole situation. Living that interdependence, how could there be opposition? How could there be anger? How could there be blame? How could there be defensiveness? And there also wasn't the opposite of anger and defensiveness, which we also need to deal with, another form of it, which is a sense of collapse, martyrdom, downtroddenness. I mean, you can imagine, like, okay, you're right. I'm blah, 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 blah. I didn't go into that either. Hakuin, if you read him, was anything ever than downtrodden. He had humor, spontaneity, ferocity, a sheer life force of engagement. It comes through all of his writings. So this, is that so, has this great sense of stability. In a sense, Hakuin's self was the self of the village. You see what I mean? The center of gravity of his life was not this one. It was, what is it that needs to happen here? How is it that this whole village needs to be cared for? The child, the young woman, the parents. What needs to happen? That's the self of interdependence. It was so natural and simple for him to respond in that way. He was there, he cared for the child, he was vibrant, he was alive, he was a person in every sense of the word, and he was freed from isolation, the gripping need of, you have to see me in a certain way, you know, that kind of craving and identity. It just was simple for him. So we can ask, how did this come about? You know, this is all nice. Joko Beck used to say, people talk a lot about, in Zen practice, people talk a lot about where we should be, but not a whole lot about how to get there. So our question should always be, okay, this is who we are right now. We have these inspirational stories. What is it that supports us to realize this? And as Shinshu's been telling us, the teachings of Shantideva are one way. This is another way. Hakuin's teachings tell us how he did this. How he was able to respond without arrogance, anger, martyrdom. There. So I'm going to backtrack a little bit and say there are two main streams of Zen practice, Rinzai and Soto. They're like siblings. They're very different in some ways, and they're very much the same in others. They share the same root. They've been living together, squabbling, and exchanging wisdom for a long, long time, going back to Chan practice in China. One difference is the central practice. The central practice in our school, Soto, Zaodong in China, is Shikantaza. This just sitting that we talk about over and over and over again. In Rinzai practice, it's a formal set of what are called koans. I'll tell you a little bit about what those are in a minute. There's a curriculum that you go through. But there are koans in Zen practice, and there is sitting in Rinzai, in Soto practice. So there's exchange. There's not isolation. So this koan that Hakuin, central to Hakuin's practice, is a question about the nature of reality. It's a question that seats itself deeply inside us and demands that we respond. So a lot of them are teaching stories. Ko means public, and on means records. So these are public records. They're respected writings on principles like the law. They're similar to the law. So they're not capricious. They're not a matter of a certain one person's opinion. They're a way to investigate a shared principle of people that's fundamental to us. There is a logic to them, even if they appear illogical, but it is a logic of the reality that they point to. So this dynamic spirit of encounter, the koans in our lives, is the spirit of Hakuin. Sometimes these are called the three pillars of Zen. They're rooted in the three pillars of Zen. They're like three legs on a tripod. And the three pillars are great faith, great doubt, and great determination. So Konya Mata Roshi, who was a very famous Rinzai teacher, born in 1907 and lived until almost the, let's see, lived until 1890, I think, something like that. 1990, something like that. He was the teacher of Robert Aitken, and anyway, quite a fabulous guy. And he wrote a whole commentary on these things, which I'm not going to go in. I might go into it with you another time. But we understand, I'm just going to say briefly, these dimensions of our practice. These dimensions that lead directly to the stability that can allow us to say, is that so? The first is great faith, meaning without any doubt, we have faith that we are intrinsically awake, that we are capable of doing this practice. In the same way that Hakuin did not disparage anyone, or feel like they had to have a different kind of life to wake up, we have the same faith about ourselves and the people that we encounter. The second is great doubt. This is not corrosive doubt, nor is it a doubt about our abilities. It is this deep questioning about the nature of reality. What is this? What is this? What is this? Great determination is resolve. I will keep going. There's this ferociousness to it. I will keep going. This sense of wanting to get to the bottom of it. So he quotes the great Zen master Basui, who's another wacky dude. Maybe I'll tell you about sometime. No matter how high the mountains of the great Dharma are, no matter how deep the sea of ignorance is, They will be as nothing before a boundless spirit of determination. Regardless of what happens, yourself is from the beginning the spontaneous self nature of Buddha. Okay? No matter how high the mountains or how great the sea or deep the sea of ignorance is, they will be as nothing before the boundless spirit of determination. Regardless of what happens, yourself is from the beginning spontaneous self-nature of Buddha. So when we realize from the beginning the spontaneous self-nature of Buddha is who we are, we have the stability to act for the benefit of all without remorse, collapse, anger, resentment, or rage. With a sense of evenness, we can live what is most true for us and for all beings, simply like Hakuin. Each day, we cultivate this mind and heart. We are curious. With a kind, determined mind, we investigate how this dedication takes shape in our lives. So this is an expression of discipline and fierceness. But those can be frightening words, right? Discipline, fierceness, you know. But this discipline and fierceness is quite small most of the time. It occurs in small things. We think of it as big things, right? I'm going to sit for 50 hours straight. I'm going to give away all my belongings and do this, that, or the other. But most often, it's in small things. It's in the nooks and crannies of our lives, right? It's in the small decisions that we have. How do we refrain from anger? How do we let go of bitterness, or self-satisfaction, or arrogance? How do we make the hard, ordinary choices to actually put what is most important to us in the middle of our lives and organize our lives around that, not around the addiction to comfort that is so prevalent in our culture? How do we cultivate generosity, joy, equanimity? These are koans. These are questions for us, right? They're living questions, not abstractions. We bring it down to our own ordinary lives. So this effort is facing what's real for us. In this moment, there's usually no rewards out there, no recognition, right? Only you know what's happening. You know that the rage has come up and you're not responding. You know you're whipping out your little sequence of practices from Shantideva, or you're taking refuge or whatever. You know what's going on in your own heart. You know when you touch the base of your humanity and your heart and mind, and you remember what your life is about. I was so struck. Last night we watched Dharma Brothers. It's a movie. Some of us, we have movie nights here at Ocean Gate, and everyone is welcome to come. And the movie has been around for a long time. I highly recommend it if you weren't with us last night, or even if you were, watch it again. It's about a 10-day retreat, Vipassana, which means a traditional mindfulness, Buddhist mindfulness retreat. This is a Goenka's teachings, for those of you that are familiar with that, in a maximum security prison in Alabama. This took guts. It took guts for the warden to approve it, for the people who challenged the prison system to have it, for the teachers who had no experience going into prisons to go there and live there for 10 days. And in particular, it took a lot of ferocious determination by the men, the incarcerated men, that walked into that room, you could see it. They did a kind of two preliminary orientations before they went out, kind of like, okay, you can, you don't have to do this, you know, you can, what is that saying, you know, not all ye who, but something like, pay attention, because this is going to be tough, and if you want to leave, leave now. And it was just really moving to see these men walk into that room and sit down and face themselves for 10 days of silence and interiority. And they were guided by a teacher that was there with them. But they sat and faced their own minds and hearts and everything that they had done. And some of these men, we were told, had done some pretty... had committed some pretty horrific acts. And they sat there and faced their own minds and hearts, faced what they had done, faced all the rage, the guilt, the regret, the longing, all of it they sat with for 10 days together. And they were transformed. The result, you could see, at least with the men that they interviewed, was a great stability, a transformation of their suffering and anger and bitterness and longing into wisdom, into intimacy with their Dharma brothers, their Dharma buddies, the men that went through this with them. They saw each other. They loved each other. At the end, they hugged each other. They went out into the greater prison population and brought stability and lack of reactivity. See, at the beginning of the movie, they give you a sense of what the noise level is like. Yeah. And the reactivity, that, I mean, you think about going into the soup of anger and bitterness and afflictive emotions and finding stability there that takes this... I mean, Hakuin would have loved these guys. You know? Because they really brought that ferocity, that dedication to open to the simple fact of their own humanity, to our humanity. And their anger dissolved. It doesn't mean they didn't feel it, and it doesn't mean it didn't come back. But the root was dissolved. This kind of tender, ferocious dedication, this way of just stopping and being with who we are, allows us to tackle disciplines like Shantidevas, allows us to listen to the deep challenges that the Dharma gives us. Without this stability, without this love, without this intimacy, without this self-respect, we get caught in all kinds of goofy notions, don't we? You know, we judge ourselves, we judge others, we run around, we get greedy, we get fooled, we spend our lives doing things that, you know, we look back and go, what were you thinking? You know. So this, this faith, this doubt, this determination point us and cultivate this stability. So Basui Zenji says, when the living have become faithful, honest, and upright and gentle, and wholeheartedly want to see the Buddha, even at the cost of their own lives, then together with the assembly of monks, the Buddha will appear. Okay, so when the living become faithful, like these men, you know, faithful means dedicated, fierce, honest. Yamada Roshi also said, honesty is the most important thing in Zazen. I've said this before. just clarity with who you are. When the living have become faithful, honest, and upright, and gentle, and wholeheartedly want to see the Buddha, even at the cost of their own lives. So you can see, upright and gentle, and want to see this even at the cost of their own lives, right? There's this dedication, this willingness. Then together with the assembly of monks, which means together with all beings, the Buddha will appear. So I would say that as I watched the vases of these men, incarcerated men, most of whom were African-American, I saw the Buddha in their faces as they sat there. You know, they saw the Buddha in their own. They understood that who they were, even for a moment. And they saw it in each other. When we do this, when we see this, our self is transformed as Hakuin's was. Anger dissolves. That opposition with reality, that opposition, that rage, that bitterness, that anger that can fuel us so much dissolves. And we can say, is that so? And take care of the baby. Right. So is that so is not, is that so? It's is that so? And please give me the baby, I'll take care of the baby. It's this combination of stability, fluidity, connection, and loving response.